So I thought we'd take a look at humbleness. Obviously, we all deal with that. We all have some certain level of arrogance in us, and that's what we're going to kind of study today. If I had to put a title on the lesson today, I'd call it Haughty by Nature.
Welcome, Jeffrey O'Brien. Welcome back.
Thank you.
You're our second repeat guest. We had John Franzen on a couple weeks ago.
Phelan.
Yeah, Franzen is his
He goes by John Franzen on social media.
That's right. That's how I remember him. But Jeffrey O'Brien is here, and we are excited. The Ring of Honor, the Haughty Ring of Honor, of the first members.
Absolutely.
So there will be no debating your induction
when
the time comes, as long as you're an all-pro. And
gotcha, yeah.
So speaking of which, we need to for those of the rare few of you who don't already know who Jeffrey O'Brien is, he's a person of substance in this media market. He pops up here, there, and everywhere, and makes himself relevant in a million different ways. But we were talking before the mics went hot. One of the things you do, Jeffrey, is you are an advisor, a counselor. To professional athletes, mostly professional football players, and you have some absolutely marvelous stories. None of which I know you're working with a project with. Are we allowed to even give some teasers on this, or do I need to just like clamp down right now?
Well, I think some of the stories are public domain, but we're one of my clients is Joe Kapp, the former Viking quarterback. One of my all-time favorite human beings, and he and his son JJ have been working on his autobiography, essentially, or an authorized biography. They've taken, and JJ did a lot of interviews with his dad and just taken a lot of this history down. He's a very colorful guy, and we'll leave it at there's a lot of stuff that a lot of people don't know about him that will eventually come out that'll be really cool to read and know about. So fun project to be working with.
Awesome.
Absolutely. You're also probably, I would think, the thing that most people might identify you with here 2018 and for maybe the last handful of years preceding is you are the lawyer, legal counsel to just about every credible distillery or brewery.
Credible, so then I'll say I'll agree with that. Yeah. I'm famous for the hashtag client beer tastes better or client spirits tastes better. And, anything you drink non-client booze and it's just like drinking, it's tasting rusty nickels. So I just try to stick to client alcohol. But yeah, I work with a lot of breweries, distilleries, wineries on a wide variety of different matters. And so, I've been fortunate to be able to handle legal compliance for, bringing about the corruption of mankind in Minnesota. So it's been kind of fun.
Yeah.
And we congratulate you for that.
Well, no, thank you.
It's there's been a pale over the Twin Cities since Sunday Sales has passed.
Yes.
I don't know if you've felt I've seen it. I felt it. That just things are darker and, demonic. I don't know if that's the word that some would use.
Some are current office holders.
Yeah, exactly.
Minnesota legislators
would probably agree with that. But thank you for coming back on, and thank you for all that you do. And a lot of your clients are a former generation of professional athlete NFL player prior to my fandom, which started in the late 80s, early 90s. But there's one in particular.
Mostly because you were a lot. That's when you were like.
That's born. When I was, a kid. I've been an NFL fan my whole life. But there was one that we may have on. I won't name names yet, but I'm very excited about the potential.
I've already leaked this another.
You're talking about Brooks?
Brooks Bollinger, we can say it?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
We just got to figure it out. He was up for it. But he's a good friend and do some stuff, a lot of stuff with him. And, former Badger. Rose Bowl winning quarterback and played fears with the Vikings and one of three Viking quarterbacks to wear, I think it's actually three Vikings total to wear number nine, of course, Tommy Kramer and wow. Jim McMahon being the other two. So I joked, I said, Brooks, we need to do like a fundraiser sometime and sell a foursome of golf where you could be the fourth along with the three number nines. Oh, and that would be like epic. Absolutely. You know, because McMahon plays golf barefoot and
still is. He looked, last time I saw him, he looked in rough shape. Is he making any? Yeah.
I think he's still, you know, he's doing okay. I mean, he's had a lot of treatments for some of the issues that he's had, and I don't think it can't reverse anything that he's gone through, but it can, you know, halt the, you know, wow. the progression of it, certainly.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that Brooks was, you know, a lot of plays you talk about, I didn't have personal, you know, experience with as a fan, but Brooks Bollinger is the one guy I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah. Brooks. I know Brooks Bollinger. Like, that would be awesome. And I think Brandon, you said, and I feel the same way. Like, if I told many of my friends who aren't as political as we are, yeah, Brooks Bollinger may be on the show, that would raise some eyebrows and be like, oh, wow, really? Like a real professional?
He's played, what, six seasons?
I think six seasons.
Yeah, just Googling the other way.
The starting, you know, you're the man. You're the quarterback. Started one season for the Jets, mm-hmm. or most of one season.
Mm-hmm. One of his biggest claims to fame in the NFL, besides, you know, winning a Rose Bowl as a freshman at Wisconsin, is huge.
Just a minor.
I remember a glorious day at Lambeau Field during his tenure.
But during his Vikings tenure, with the game where Adrian Peterson set the single game rushing record, Tavarius Jackson got hurt, and Brooks ended up coming in and spent most of the game playing quarterback. And basically, he said it was like a throwback to college. All he did was turn around, hand the ball off.
Right.
Who did he hand off to at Wisconsin?
Rondane.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Jeez. All time college great.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But maybe, so, you know, I think he can take at least maybe a decile of credit for that event. I mean, after all, the exact proximity of where he turned to hand the ball off and when
clearly
Adrian Peterson took the ball, even the height at which he took it, all were factors in him hitting the hole.
Like
he did, right?
It's funny because
I mean, come on,
we can talk. Right. He'll talk about more when we have him in, but he will joke. Someone asked him after the game, did this game, like, somehow, how was his confidence after this game? And he said, I am completely confident in my ability to turn around and hand the ball off to Adrian Peterson.
Yes, right. I remember that, actually.
It's a good gig if you can get it.
He's a funny guy, so he'll be, I'm glad that he said that he would come in and talk with you guys.
That's awesome.
A little football stuff, so.
Yeah. So what's new in the, I know there's a couple other things we're going to cover today,
mm-hmm.
More personal things, but what's going on in the brewery, distillery scene in the Twin Cities these days? What's new? What's good?
Breweries, you know, they are what they are. There's few new ones open. Got a new one open in Bethel, Minnesota, Garfish, which is really good.
Where were you at? You had a gluten-free beer?
Yes, Burning Brothers is the only Minnesota gluten-free brewery over in St. Paul, just beyond the Hamlin campus. And yeah, they you know, it's hard to make a gluten-free beer that tastes like beer, and they do a really good job with it. And so I'm proud to have them as a client as nice. Well. And we're working on working with the guys at Number 12 Cider House. They're going to be opening up a Minneapolis location now, moving their winery cidery down to the North Loop. So that'll be really good. And I think that's the next wave. I think is the gluten free, the hard cider is going to be the growth market more than the distillery, simply because mm-hmm. the laws are so restrictive against distilleries. So we have who we have, and we'll a few coming open. We had Brother Justice Whiskey that made their grand opening okay. Last weekend. Wow. The only thing they're going to do is they do single malt whiskey mm-hmm. made from Minnesota barley. And they so they've got a couple different versions of their single malt whiskey, so they're now in the market. And
look me in the eyes and tell me it's a good whiskey.
I haven't had it yet, but I've had a lot of people that are good that are whiskey fans have tried it and said it's very good whiskey.
Yeah,
good.
That's fantastic to hear.
Yeah, yeah.
If and when you get an extra bottle laying around,
yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah.
I know some people that would consume.
We might have to do another. We have to do an episode with this whiskey tasting to bring the different ones in and just a little little Pepsi challenge on the whiskey.
Yeah. Love it, love it.
There's got to be a cockeyed label, you know, on one of those bottles. Yeah. clearance for the clearance rack. I mean, come on now. Quality control is very important.
Right.
You never know what could fall off the back of a truck.
Yeah. Yeah. Sopranos like. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
So Jeffrey, last time I saw you, I ran into you. I didn't run into you. I came because I intentionally went to see you.
Stalker.
You. And not unlike the situation we're going to talk about tonight. I was stalking. Yeah.
Not unlike.
And, but I went to see you give a presentation on how you have gone about this very deliberate but very fun and a journey on branding yourself as this all things to all people. You know, you're have a wonderful breadth and depth of legal knowledge in a number of like esoteric subjects, mm-hmm. and you're able to and you've fashioned this personality. By the time this is aired, this will have already transpired, but like, just to give folks a sense, tomorrow you're going to be on morning talk radio in this town talking about was it today or yesterday the Supreme Court decision
today yep
that invalidated 120-year-old Minnesota law which prohibited the exhibition of any kind of political garb, mm-hmm. and the Supreme Court struck it down 7-2 mm-hmm. today, and you're going to be talking about that tomorrow. So you'll have already said this live, but to most people, but tell us what you're going to say tomorrow.
Well, we're
going to
talk about the case, and you know, the Supreme Court did reverse and remand for further proceeding, but they went after one particular clause. You know, they said for the most part the statute is fine, but they talk about political insignia, and they said the problem with the statute is it doesn't define political. And Chief Justice Roberts actually writes the opinion, and he said the problem with this, the way it's written, and particularly some guidance that the Elections Division, Secretary of State gave out just before the 2010 election, which is what the genesis of this whole lawsuit was about, when statutes are vague like that, it leads to abuse in terms of exercise of discretion in terms of somebody's political bias. So he talks in the decision about examples that apparently this must have been an oral argument that they threw out to the lawyers for the state of Minnesota as to examples of what may or may not. If you're talking, this was talking about somebody had a Tea Party Patriots T-shirt on. At the polls, and so they went through the examples and what the state's response was on various issues, and they said there was people walked through with a button that said ID me, and the elections people said that was political, had to take it, they were written down or whatever, they were reported for this violation. And Roberts noted that there was no voter ID law on the ballot that year, but some candidate had taken a position on it, so therefore they deemed it political. So then he goes through this whole list of what they said was okay and not. So they say
this must have been Kennedy.
This was Roberts.
Oh, okay.
And he said this was the state's response. All Lives Matter T-shirts, political. NRA. T-shirts, political. Rainbow shirts, fine, because there was no gay rights issue on the ballot.
But that's not the
criteria, this was the best
criteria,
one.
Though.
The best one. You couldn't wear a T-shirt with the Second Amendment on it, but you could wear one with the First Amendment.
<That's>, not all amendments are created equal.
That absolutely.
And so he says this is way too open to interpretation.
My goodness.
What he said is, with some great language, he said that there's no definition of political. He said the statute is unmoored when it comes to the definition of political. And so it's when they said when those
unmoored, whenever you're digging deep into a heady opinion, you got to use moored, right? That was a big Scalia word.
Yeah,
unmoored.
So yeah, it's interesting. You know, it's always fun to read these opinions because they all have their own writing style. You know, Roberts, I always say that, you know, when you look at what Roberts has tried to do on the court in the aftermath of the Bush v. Gore, Roberts has tried like hell to keep the court off from being a political target.
Yeah.
And so he always tries to find the non-controversial opinion in something. Kennedy's an interesting
ACA.
Kenny,
decision.
Well, and I think that goes to it. I think he strove to find a reason to call it constitutional so that his view is basically, if you don't like something, vote them the other way. But don't come to, stop bringing this stuff to us. And I think in some respects, at the state Supreme Court, I think Chief Justice Gilday is the same way. I think you saw with the legislature v. Dayton case, I think that was the same kind of thing. They tried everything possible not to have to rule on that because they didn't want to be involved in a political dispute. Mm-hmm. So, by contrast, Justice Kennedy, who, a week ago came out with the cake baker case, he's got an interesting style because he'll write, some big flowery opinion and then he'll kind of tip you off as to the nuances that, the cases that yet need to come to the court so they can finish off the nuances of the whole issue. So he'll say, we haven't decided this here, meaning bring us the case that says this and then we'll decide that. So it's really interesting to see. And of course, nobody beats Scalia in terms of his opinions. His were just downright entertaining to read. It's interesting to read their different styles of their opinions.
Let me float a theory by you. I think, what if the cake bake decision, which was written by Kennedy, it almost seemed like a valedictory to me, because it was created massive new case law, right? Mm-hmm. But because I think he was like, finally, allow me to be hopeful. Like, I think he was going, I'm not going to go out with some, flourish. I'm just going to decide this on the merits of this particular case. I'm going to move on because I'm ready to hang it up and I'm going to let somebody else come in and pull the trigger one way or the other.
You might be right. I think that, I've heard a lot of talk that, he's thinking of stepping aside before the midterms. Well, they know for sure that they've got the Senate so they can run them through. I honestly don't think I think it would be a really hard, you'd have to have a serious blue wave for the Democrats to take over the U.S. Senate.
Right.
They could win the House, but I don't think they're going to win the Senate. Just the seats are stacked against them. But I think maybe the same sex marriage case, that's his really kind of become his hallmark now, his legacy. And I think, there's the case, the florist case out in Arizona, which would get to the issue of what's the limits of this religious conviction exception. I think he wants that case. I think he ultimately,
you think he wants it?
I think he wants that one I think he wants to close it out, to finish, close the loop on issue.
He wants one more.
Well, he asks in the opinion, he brings it up. He says, we haven't decided the issue of these facts aren't in front of us. Justice Kennedy writes, these facts aren't in front of us, meaning is translation, Justice Kennedy speak for, I want these facts to be in front of us.
What is that case? I'm not familiar with
Similar case, florist that didn't want to do flowers for a same sex couple,
gotcha.
And mm-hmm. Claiming that under their because of their religious beliefs. So I said it on Justice and Drew a week ago. I think my prediction is if this court stays the makeup that it is when that case comes up, I think that exception is going to be extremely narrow. I think it's basically going to be for clergy and churches. And if they basically are going to say, if you're putting yourself out there, holding yourself up, providing services to the public, guess what? Mm-hmm. You can't discriminate. Someone comes in, wants a cake, you got to give them a cake. You want flowers, you want flowers. If you don't want to be involved in, doing it, then don't be in the wedding business. Mm-hmm. So that's my prediction. That's just, not saying anything about merits. I'm just saying I predict under this court right now, I think it would be a 5-4 going that way.
Well, and I don't disagree, but I was just reading the tea leaves thinking maybe that was Kennedy's way of saying, you know what? I'm hanging her up and I'm just going to step aside. I don't need to.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I know I had some people said that by Trump picking Gorsuch as, a former Kennedy clerk, that perhaps that was kind of the suggestion of, it's going to be okay without you here. And, you can move on. So, we'll see what happens. My gut is he's going to step down at a time where Trump can appoint a replacement because that's just what they do. They, other than maybe Justice Souter, you look at a guy like Justice Byron Whizzer White when he was on there, and he was a Kennedy appointee, became very conservative.
Right.
He was part
of the Rehnquist block, but
he still stepped down during Clinton's term and let Clinton appoint the replacement.
The only one that I can think of in recent you know, in the last 30 years that kind of stabbed his or her party in the back was David Suter, who went out of his way to step down.
Suter's a good case of not doing your due diligence.
Yep.
He was one that, and, you know, even Justice Stevens, now, the different era, but he was a Ford appointee.
Right. And think about that. And he didn't author Roe.
No, Blackmun did.
Blackmun did, of course. Because that was 73 and would have been like 75. Okay.
Yep. Yep. I remember one of my professors in law school, my constitutional law professor, said basically Roe v. Wade is what you get when you get the former general counsel for the Mayo Clinic and you let him write the opinion. You know, I mean, that's the technical parts of that opinion only would come from somebody who was in the, you know, in that area that would have any knowledge of it. So,
wow. That's really making law out of whole cloth, isn't it? When you start applying an entirely different discipline and writing it into an opinion.
It's fun to study the court. I have a particular affinity to it because being a William Mitchell grad, you know, obviously Warren Berger, former Chief Justice, is, you know, it was St. Paul Law School, but it was the predecessor to now Mitchell Hamlin. When I was there, it was William Mitchell. Mm-hmm. He's an interesting study in and of himself in that, he's kind of has a reputation of, you know, letting the court drift to the left during his tenure. And I remember when I was, actually just starting law school, and I'd been out some conservative enclave out in D.C. and someone, when I told him I was from William Mitchell and Warren Berger's alma mater, and this guy said, oh yeah, Warren Berger, you know, he would sometimes vote with the side that he didn't agree with.
So that he could assign himself the opinion.
And write that opinion in narrowly. A way very narrowly so that it couldn't be taken any further than he wanted it to.
Yeah.
There's actually a book out called, I think it was The Berger Court and the Rise of the Judicial Right. Mm-hmm. And they basically, the theory of the book is that contrary to what everybody, says about him, Berger actually started the drift back towards strict constructionism during his tenure by doing that, writing these, taking these opinions and kind of keeping the lid on things. And then, of course, when it shifted to the Rehnquist Court, then it kept moving further to the, to the right. But like I said, Berger doesn't get enough credit for that. But yeah, so he's a fascinating study. To think about voting against your what you believe is the right way simply so that you can rein in what's coming from the others.
You know, it's very interesting now that, you know, let's say Kennedy retires and let's say Trump during his tenure gets like a 6-3, like solid conservative majority, mm-hmm. where a Neil Gorsuch is like at the center of the ideological side of the, majority,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
There are Democrats now talking about Republicans finally use the nuclear option here, right, to put Gorsuch
mm-hmm.
through.
Mm-hmm.
But the Democrats, they actually, believe it or not, have one perfectly legal Trump card to that. When the stars align for them, they can add another 2-3 people to the court. There is nothing prohibiting. And you tell me the next time they win a, 53-47 and, 450 electoral vote election, sometime in the intermediate future, they're absolutely going to do that if the court gets too conservative for them.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think it a lot depends on what happens, in the next presidential election. Obviously, if I think Kennedy's the one that that could go before the midterms. If Trump does pull off a second term, I think obviously Ruth Bader Ginsburg's not getting any younger. She would be the one I would think that might be the one to go.
Stephen Breyer is actually on the doorstep of 80 himself.
Yep. So, it's very interesting. It was kind of funny before the election. I'll give you a little inside scoop here. So Drew Lee and I had been planning the show and going through the whole Berger thing as to would Roberts do this with Hillary as president and appointing a liberal to replace Scalia. So we had already written, had the show all kind of roughed out for the Supreme Court under Hillary. We just basically ripped it up and threw it away and did, you know, went with, you know, well, now we know what's going to happen. It's going to stay this, you know, kind of stay the way it is. So, but yeah, we're already getting, you know, the fatalistic approach and thinking that this was going to happen. And was Roberts going to be, you know, adept enough intellectually to do what Berger did? And my guess would he would not have been, because he's just so apolitical when it comes to, you know, the way he runs that court. And so, you know, we're kind of looking ahead like, this is not going to be good. And then, you know, things change.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, in this environment, and it's only going to get more so, the swings back and forth likely to be pretty violent. Nothing would surprise me at this point in terms of sort of leaving aside convention and just getting it done, you know, in terms of packing the court.
Sure.
And I think for a lot of folks, you know, we talk a lot about the U.S. Supreme Court. You know, we got an open seat for governor here in Minnesota. And, you know, the state Supreme Court has far greater turnover than the U.S. Supreme Court because they have to run for election every 6 years. Most of them don't like the idea of having the campaign. So they just bolt and let the governor appoint the, their successor. So there ends up being a lot of turnover on that court. Right now we're sitting there with a 7-2 Dayton appointee majority.
Wow.
So if you're challenging a tax court decision or a decision of an agency or a property rights matter,
good luck.
That's not a court you want to face right now. So, you know, there's a lot at stake, you know, this fall. And there's a lot of folks, you know, whether, you know, it could be president or governor. Sometimes it's hold your nose and vote a certain way for the only reason of being the court. You know, this is what affects me, and I don't need the other side picking someone that's going to go against my interests if I have to, you know, bring a case for myself or for a client up to them.
So you not only live the law professionally, and have a personal passion for the law, obviously, as well, for higher courts.
Law.
You are Judge Dredd. But you've had a personal interaction with the law being enforced or not enforced in your area.
When you live in Wright County, it's more not enforced.
You live
yeah.
in, you have a blog.
Check this place out.
Yeah. Anarchy, it sounds like, out there, which does not sound all that great, according to your experience.
By the way, the outtake music, I'm nixing the other one. We're going with Judge Anthrax. Judge Dredd is what we're ending the episode on here. So
maybe I'll be I Shot the Sheriff
there
or
we
Judge
go.
Dredd
Let's
or Body
it.
Count. Mm-hmm. So you had an experience or had multiple experiences over the years
mm-hmm.
with your local law enforcement or mm-hmm. lack thereof. And you wrote a blog post about that on your personal blog, which we all read.
Mm-hmm.
It was fascinating. Do you want to walk us through your
yeah,
experience
yeah.
with Wright County?
Yeah. So, and I'm talking about this now. Some of these things have been almost a decade that since some of them happened, but
what you do need to work in though is the whole tie-in with how Forest Lake and, because that's relatively recent
in
people's minds.
I wrote the blog post came about when Forest Lake was considering, the city council was considering doing away with its police force and instead relying on the sheriff's department. And I saw that living in Wright County. And so, you know, Wright County there's two cities in Wright County, Buffalo and Howard Lake, that have their own police force. Everything else is on a contract basis through the Wright County
even
Sheriff.
Albertville?
That's even Albertville. Sheriff. Yes. You have a large outlet mall and you've got a couple of deputies running around town trying to patrol it. And what I've come to understand from talking with folks, and, you know, and when I talk about this stuff, I should do the disclaimer. I have friends in law enforcement. I'm not knee-jerk anti-law enforcement, but I don't like, when you hear about the stories of, well, when you hear the stories of the bad apples and, you know, and yeah. I'm not like some of my fellow, you know, folks on the right, the Republicans that swoon over law enforcement. Sure. I understand that, yeah, there's some shady characters that shouldn't have badges.
Sure.
And
sure.
there has to, and my point is that there has to be some mechanism of culling out the bad apples from the bunch rather than just always talking about them. And I don't know that there's any worse law enforcement agency in the state than the Wright County Sheriff.
Wow.
They're misogynistic. They're incompetent. I mean, they make Roscoe and Enos from the Dukes of Hazzard look good. we have a sheriff right now, fortunately is not running again, but he's very political. It was all about image and everything. So, you know, things like, well, let's not report, you know, incident, you know, crime statistics, because then I can say that crime is down. But every year,
0% was the crime rate.
Every year, you know, when every year the bank in town gets hit and, you know, everybody makes a quick getaway to 94 somehow, you know, they just, and it's not just the sheriff.
For a while,
it was a 2 or 3 year stretch where the premier bank in Albertville would get tagged and they would make it their way to 94 right away. And before they could even, you know,
I gotta be honest, Jeffrey, everything you've told me about Wright County makes me want to pack up and move there tomorrow.
Absolutely. Well, it's like the Wild West. It's Amcampistan. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, it works as long as you get the right folks living there. But then what happened was, and a lot of this was a product of when the real estate market crashed. So I ended up, you ask, why the hell are you out in Albertville? You know, we move out from kind of the outer ring suburbs out there, and you know, we're being, you know, at that point, the real estate market, that, you know, everything was expanding out that way. It was becoming the next suburb. And we live in an association controlled neighborhood. It's like a little community, a city inside the city, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I found out since then that doesn't work at all. Mm-hmm. Put a bunch of rules, put about a 3-inch binder of rules in place and give nobody any kind of police power to enforce it. And you find out that things don't work that well. And you get the situations like we've gone through. And so what happened was, this was supposed to be kind of like a neighborhood full of executives and professionals, telecommuter, you know, people would commute down to the cities.
Lawyers extraordinaire.
There you go. Sure.
The one.
Business owners, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then the real estate market crashed. And overnight, houses that we would maybe pay $450 for became $250. Jeez. So now we've got the local yokels in there. And
a bunch of auto finance managers. Yeah. And
I'm not
going to
comment on what they are. But they, you know, our neighborhood also has a pool. So it was, oh my God, I can't believe I finally can afford to live in here. I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Another one. So, you know, it's interesting how it's shaken out now, and now the market's coming back up and we're getting a little different mix. But it's been 10 years of living near some of the worst degenerates that I've ever laid eyes on. And no worse than the one next door to me. But so you throw that into an environment in a community where you have a county sheriff's department providing all the law enforcement for the county, and city councils who don't want to, Albertville wants to get just big enough where they can get enough tax dollars, but for the original four families that formed the town not to lose their clout. And that's really what it comes to. And so they're underfunded, they're understaffed. The scary stuff is, and I've got a friend that's running for sheriff as the only guy that's not from the department that's running to take the guy's place.
But he's qualified and
he's a deputy in another county. Gotcha. in Hennepin County, actually.
Oh, sure.
And he brought this up the last campaign, said this sheriff's department is not equipped to handle an active shooter situation. Hmm. Now that's scary.
Yeah.
You know, he said they don't have the training.
There's a mall in.
Yeah. He said they don't have the training to deal with this. Now they all disagree. Well, you know, budgets and this, and it's like, no. And so, I mean, that as a citizen of the county, that's the kind of stuff that scares you. It's like, great. So they really aren't equipped to do with anything more than, you know, the traffic stops, and that's about it. But I've also since learned that, you know, when it comes to these sheriff departments, there's probably no two worse ones in the state than Wright County and Anoka County.
I live literally at like a quarter mile down this like a street, not a road, like a street. Let's make sure this is worth it, because like my place is about to get boxed in.
Well, the guy that lives next to me is an Anoka County deputy. Actually, works in the jail. Now, I've been told, I'm still a lot of stuff that I'm still researching and confirming and working with clients or investigators and media mm-hmm. people and everything to kind of sleuth this stuff out. But what I was told is that particularly in those two counties, the bad deputies don't get, you know, terminated. They end up being put in the jail.
Gotcha.
So I'm like, well, given this guy's behavior, I have no doubt believe that that's true, that they just shove rather than deal with the grievances and the lawsuits, is just shove them in the jail.
Aren't those public record?
I don't know if you can get their personnel records. And I was told, someone told me that after 5 years, they get rid of them.
5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope that's not true. I'm sure it may be true, but.
Think about the implications of that in the realm of law enforcement. I mean, you could have some, I think there are a number of folks that choose that profession that have varying levels of sociopathy. But I mean, if you imagine if someone just, you know, did something just heinous in another, you know.
Yeah. Well, the analogy I think of is with the Catholic Church and all the lawsuits they're fighting off and paying out settlements on from shifting, you know, priests around that were abusing kids. You know, we're all, you know, with all these different seats that are open up and up for election this year, you know, being the Minnesota Attorney General's office being one of them, I think a prime initiative for the next Attorney General, rather than just sitting there and doing press conferences and preening yourself for higher political office, is
not naming names there.
I would audit every department and get the personnel records and make public if they're shifting guys around that don't belong in law enforcement because they just don't want to deal with it. I think it's time to deal with it. I mean, you know, you always hear the bad ones get the good ones hurt or worse. I mean, it's just something needs to be done about some of these guys. And
isn't that, there was a story I read, I can't remember if it was Cato Institute or Reason or something like that, that was along those lines, which was basically in the United...
Something libertarian?
Yeah, something freedom.
Something true liberty.
Freedom. Where basically this phenomenon is happening around the country, where you'll hear a horrific sort of news story about some sort of police abuse. Maybe this guy kicked the shit out of some guy, some homeless guy for no reason or whatever. Turns out that they take their severance package, you know, or whatever, because they're almost mm-hmm. never found guilty.
Mm-hmm.
They end up in a different jurisdiction,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times out of state. So you have these sadistic, you know,
criminal
power hungry, you know, maniacs basically that are traversing the country
with one pension and amassing a second.
Well, and the reporting between the departments just doesn't happen. So mm-hmm. the situation that my wife and I have dealt with our it started out with a neighbor issue. It became that happened that there was a particular Wright County deputy that was involved in two separate incidents, and it was only this year where I've got to know one of the candidates running who happens to be in the department where I finally have got some answers on some of this stuff. And every time I talk to him, he makes pains to point out that this deputy is no longer there, but he won't tell me why he's no longer there. I'm like, okay, my curiosity is piqued now. But this is a situation, but I asked him, where does the threshold come when you start reporting? If you've got a member of another department living in your county, where does the line, what line has to be crossed before you pick up the phone and say, hey, you got a jagoff living in my right. county. What's going on? And he said, basically, he cited somebody that was, you know, convicted of DWI. You have to basically go all the way through and have a conviction before they'll even pick up the phone and report it to the other department and to the contrary. You know, the situation that this was the incident with our neighbor. This was the story back to 2009, and I finally actually got the police report on it. And you compare what the deputy who is no longer with the department wrote compared to, and I happen to be, my wife could see it was coming, called me, so she said, I'm calling my attorney. Wow. And so I was on the phone while the deputy was there. So I heard I heard what she said, and what the report says is not, there's a few key facts that are omitted. So, you know, they talk, so the neighbor, what happened was we had a, you know, I said we live in a neighborhood that's association controlled, which mm-hmm. includes, you know, and you know, you can say what you want about associations, but you have a choice of living there. When you're handed a 3-inch binder of rules and regs,
I'm all about association.
And you have to have your your landscaping approved by a committee of residents before you do it. Yeah. And you sign on the dotted line, you've kind of bound yourself to that,
Absolutely.
So we get involved. You know, they say, "Oh, lawyer, let's get you involved." And then they peg my wife for the architectural review committee because she was into landscaping and design and stuff. They said, we want your opinions on this." So that's how it starts. And so at some point, the neighbor moves in one of the, the discount houses, the blue lights. I used to call him Blue Light because he was a blue light special living next door. And, first of all, he creates an entire ruckus just bringing in his landscaping because he's got rock laying in this. It's the I'm above the law. I can do whatever I want. Screw you. Whatever. Kind of doing.
He signed the same contract you did with the association, I assume.
Yeah, whether or not he could read it, I don't know. But all evidence to the contrary.
Objection.
So, at some point during the summer, a lot of stuff going on, and the chairman of our architecture review committee tells a couple of the committee members, "Hey, we need to break up. We need to go out and all this stuff that we've approved. We need to make sure that it's they're supposed to get it done within a certain period of time. We got to go make sure that." That this is, that this is done and it conforms with what they did. So here, take these plans and go out and do it. One of them happened to be the next door neighbor and his deck. And so my wife and another member of the committee are on his property, which is clearly enumerated in the HOA documents that can happen, and to inspect it and to verify compliance. And so then they make their way all the way around the neighborhood on doing all their things. Don't have an issue with anybody. She's walking back home. This asshole stands on his front step and yells at her, "We have a problem with my deck." And so this then becomes, "Well, if you can be on my property, I can be on your property." Oh. It's like, "You're not on the HOA, you dumbass."
Right.
And so this is where it started. So it was, step, 4 feet into the yard while he's, mowing in front of the window so she could see that, I can do this because you did this and all this. And that's where it kind of started. And we put up.
And she didn't rule against him or fight his deck or anything. It's not like she was putting up a fight against him. Just like, checking it out.
No.
Walking around.
No, right. Right. She just was verifying that it was completed in the way that his plan said it was going to be completed. And so.
Just the aggression, the territory, just this primitive aggression.
Yeah. And it got so bad. And it sits just at a level below where I could go hit his ass with a restraining order.
Yeah.
And he knows it, I think. And so later that year, I get, my wife hears a noise band in the house and she catches him kind of running out of the yard. We think he was peeking into our windows in our basement, and it's like, okay. So this is with the groundwork for this is now, this is the following spring. And he's
a deputy. This is
a guy who works in the Anoka County Jail. So anybody that's listening that's in Anoka County, this is what this
and
is.
He
what
still does.
He does. Still does. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So he's doing the same. Starts the season starts. Spring starts out. This is May of 2009. He's doing it again. My wife, she said, "I'm going to go just talk to him. See
right. if we like, can like stop adults
doing yeah. what again? Like
he's over. The windows he's like 2 feet into the yard, mowing his yard, and he's over the over into our yard all the time. Right,
but making it obvious.
Yeah,
he's making it.
So she walks over and she just she says his name. She says and very politely she said, "We could get along a lot better this year if you just stay on your side of the lot line." And he didn't say anything. He walked away, went in the house, and then she called me. She goes, "I think he's calling the sheriff." I'm like, "No, not for that." She goes, "Yeah, sheriff just showed up. Keep me on the phone." So he comes up and said, "Well, I understand you had a confrontation with your neighbor." She's like, "No, I asked him if he could stay on his side of the lot line." Granted, when she spoke with him, he was already in our yard. So she's telling somebody who's on her property, "Could you not be in my yard?" And that was reported as a confrontation.
Wow.
And so my wife then says, "Well, here, let me show you what's been going on." And she walks him back to our back of our house and shows where he was. And she goes, "No, would you agree that that's my property?" "Well, of course." "Well, why would he be back here?" And the guy deputy didn't have a response to it. And it kind of ends the conversation. He was going to go over and talk to him. He said, he can mow his yard any way he wants. She goes, "True, but he can't do it by being in my yard all the time."
Sure.
So I was always curious. It took a while to finally sleuth down the report, and this shows you kind of the brotherhood here. Mm-hmm. I pulled it up, and so this is what it says, and I'll leave names out. So it says, on,
and he's looking at it right now. I assume,
yeah, this is
right?
this is the report.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, we can see. Yeah.
And
it's
this is the
legit.
This is my columns of the report versus what actually happened because I was on the phone listening.
Sure. You got some serious Excel.
Don't I?
Documentation here?
I think it's actually a Word table.
You're about to hear the truth.
Word table.
So May 11, 2009. So on 5/11/09 at approximately 13:09 hours, I responded to a neighborhood dispute at, and gives the address. We'll just use this name. Asshat stated that his neighbor had been yelling at him and telling him he was not mowing his lawn the correct way. Now, what I told you guys. She walked over and politely asked him if he could just stay in his yard.
Right. Don't care how you mow the lawn.
No yelling, anything. Just walked over and politely said, could you stay in
just
your yard?
Just like mow your lawn.
Yeah, you could get along a lot better if you just
unless
stay
you
in
want
your
to just
yard.
Finish the whole thing.
Yeah.
Which would be totally cool.
You can also. Get my lawn if you,
So we'll just say, Asshat stated that he and lawyer extraordinaire's wife.
He's known more affectionately to his friends and family as Fuck.
So. There you go.
Officer. Fuck.
I think he's also been known in our house as Shithead, Dumbass, a lot of different things. Mrs. Lawyer Extraordinaire had confrontations with each other last year. Now, if standing on your front step and yelling at your neighbor and constantly trying to goad them by trespassing in their yard is considered a confrontation, I suppose that's correct. That sounds to me a little bit like borderline harassment unilaterally.
He's not wrong, though. He did confront your wife.
Yeah, but so yeah, it says confrontations with each other.
Ah.
Well, not really. It was more one-sided.
And by more, we mean completely.
So then the next step, Lawyer Extraordinaire's wife stated she did not want Dumbass walking in her yard when he was mowing his lawn at any other time. It's not exactly what she said. She took him back to the back of the house, showed him where the guy was behind our house. That part is completely omitted from the report.
That he was previously.
And there's where you see the subtle little sleight of hand on how they write these things, because you know,
no mention that
right.
There's clear evidence that they're that they're.
And then he says both parties were advised to stay on their own property and to avoid contact with each other. And I guess he told my wife he can mow his yard any way he wants. Okay, now here's the interesting part. That was the whole sum and substance of this incident. So 5 years later. We won't get into how this all transpired, but his wife was gone, and now he's got someone else living there, and I don't have the records to support what I've been told happened, so I'm not going to say anything about it. We can talk about that
off
air.
What is your conjecture?
Huh?
What is your conjecture?
We'll just leave it at that. I don't need to get a defamation suit until I have documents in front of me. Anyway, so.
Asshat versus Lord Extraordinaire.
So, a woman moves in with him and her three children, and they are spending a day throwing rocks at my house. Jeez. And my wife asks them not to do it and tells them, which is true, that this is considered vandalism, and if they, you know, if they were to damage something, that she could call the sheriff. So this is now you get into the self-esteem generation of parents that come down later on that night and are, you know, just castigating us because we had the audacity to suggest this, and we were told that we should let them do this because this is what they were feeling in the moment. So we were stifling their creativity. This is like a few weeks after Ferguson. And we had like a mini, like, white people Ferguson on our street with all these parents, you know, congregating at the street, coming our way and like standing in our driveway. And we were like worried about our safety. And so my wife calls the sheriff. They put her to, of course, get, you know, the deputy that responded 5 years earlier to this thing. And transpires, and at one point he says, well, now keep in mind, he came out for a confrontation over saying which way, you know, to apparently yelling about how to mow the lawn, right? And he says to my wife, well, do you see any weapons? And she's like, well, not that I don't see anything visible. No. And he said, well, if there are no visible weapons, I'm not coming out.
He said this on the phone.
Yeah. So dude calls, standing in somebody else's yard, and saying that, you know, well, I got, you know, I had a confrontation with my neighbor. But woman calls with a mob in the fucking driveway, and he says, well, if you can't see any weapons, I'm not coming out. But of course, he's no longer with the department, but they won't tell me
how. Is that, just regardless of all the personal subjectivity you have here and experience, legally, if there are a group of people confronting a homeowner or vice versa, a cop just to say, I'm not going to come out.
I think part of it goes back. I think it goes to a couple things given this county. I think part of it is the staffing issue.
Okay.
These cities underfund law enforcement out there, so they don't have, you know, they're looking for revenue stops on the county roads versus, you know, they don't want to go be proactive and stop. They've gone away from being preventative. They are simply reactive to if the shit hits the fan, they'll deal with it, right? They go clean up accidents. They pull over people.
Right.
They
deal DUIs.
Yeah, exactly. Gotcha. They're about only thing they're equipped to deal with is traffic stuff. I mean, they can't even deal with, you know, the land behind us, we've got it's vacant. Now it's being built on, but for a long time it was investor owned and people would just use it for whatever, right? ATVs, snowmobiles. It's not yours. What part of private property don't you understand? So you call the sheriff and it's like watching a snipe hunt, trying to watch them drive around and try to find, you know, it's like, I can see them. They're right there. I can see your car over here. Well, I can't go over there. So there's, it's an ignorance of the laws. It's just an ignorance of everything. Plus again, they're understaffed and they're not trained properly.
Sure.
And so you get this nice little cocktail between, you know, degenerates living next to you. And of course, because they've got a badge too, that there's sympathy for them. And so part of the reason why I'm talking about this now is he's now tried to reinvent himself. He's got his little thin blue line flag out every once in a while. So I get my Gadsden flag out and throw it whenever he throws that thing out. And I'm like, no, you're not reinventing yourself. You're a piece of shit and I'm going to use whatever resources I have to bring this to light when everybody's running for election so that something gets done about this. Cause I don't think my wife hasn't gone to the mailbox in 10 years. She refuses to walk past his house to go. We have the community mailboxes. She won't go out there. And I'm like, I don't blame you. You know? And it's sad that an environment like that is allowed to exist. And I put it back on, you've got bad apples protecting bad apples. And it's time something gets done about it.
Is it a bad apple issue? I mean, certainly is a bad apple issue. But how much is it? The funding and the training aspect of that.
Oh, I think it's huge. I think particularly when you're talking about Wright County, I think a change in leadership to somebody that is an outsider that has a different perspective that's been living there and is frustrated too. I mean, there's a lot of folks I know privately will say, tell people, talk to people on that force that are frustrated with what's gone on. Sure. There's a huge amount of turnover and you see guys come on that are, you know, that are really nice guys. You know, there was a time where when, you know, you get some of them where they'd come up and, you know, if you called in on something, they'd call you back, tell you, well, you know, we did this. This is how we resolved it. Or, you know, if they were looking for something going on, if they couldn't find somebody, they'd pull in and, you know, knock on the door and you talk to them a little bit and really friendly, you know, they'd take all the information and they said, well, you know, they'd follow up. It was like a customer service thing, sure. Right? And that's kind of that's actually, you know, at the end, the benefit of living in a jurisdiction where the sheriff's department is in charge is in theory, they're more accountable because the head of the department has to run for reelection, right? Sure. But when you figure out a way how to basically keep yourself entrenched like a police chief where your election is simply kind of nominal because you suppress crime statistics and do everything else and you're playing politics with the office and, you know, then it becomes a problem.
Well, I know incumbency is huge in partisan races, but it's even, I mean, it's almost, I mean, you can, what is it, 98% of nonpartisan offices win
re-election? Yeah, that's the tricky part about it, just because it is a nonpartisan race.
So. Anoka County has had was notable a few cycles back because they actually did have a somewhat competitive, I mean, like one of the guys managed to get north of 30%.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, I mean, that was a rarity.
Mm-hmm.
And is it because they get to put incumbent by their name? Is that what it is? Or
people just know them. And I think out there, you know, there's still this, there's kind of this, I would say a tension in the community, especially in the northeastern part of the county where I am, about are you a small town or are you a suburb? And it's like you've got an outlet mall and you ran a freeway through and everything you approve is these multi-unit developments. If the quarter acre lot, guess what? You're a suburb now.
Right.
Get over it. And they just, you know, and so there's still some that, you know, the other issue we had early on in when we moved out there, I heard other neighbors that would complain about this, that they would call the sheriff because somebody's dog is barking at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever, or someone loud music. The deputy would come to the door and say, well, so-and-so called and complained. Because that was, you know, back in the day when the houses were 10 miles, when their farms 10 miles apart, that's how they handled it. But it's like, you can't do that when the person that complained is a block over.
Right.
That really does well for neighbor relations. Then you get the retaliatory, calls to, for whatever, you know, whatever it is. But, so yeah, it's an interesting environment that's going on out there.
What would you recommend the average citizen do with, if they have a similar experience with a neighbor or with their law enforcement, in terms of documentation or in terms of, hey, no, I wasn't treated appropriately by my local
law enforcement? I would speak out. You know, I would, you know, get the reports. You know, this happened, like I said, my wife, you know, at that time, this is way back before you had a lot of smartphones. So it was just, you know, me listening on the phone. But these days, you know, flash the, you know, get the cameras out, you know, basically, you know, accountability is the key.
I'm glad to hear you say that. We're friends with another Andrew Henderson, who's big in this community for, like, always be filming cops.
Mm-hmm.
And you would agree that that's, are there any, you know, I mean, without reservation, a citizen should be able to record their law enforcement,
absolutely,
correct?
Absolutely, you know, and it's, like I said, I'm not knee-jerk anti-law enforcement, but I'm also not going to swoon over them. I understand that, you know, you have everybody, in what, no matter what profession, needs to be held accountable for their actions.
Sure.
And I think, unfortunately, in the situation that I'm in, I don't believe that the person that lives next door to me has been held accountable for his actions. I mean, I don't know what he's done. I mean, I have some stories about what may have gone on while he's on duty, but this is just dealing with his off-duty behavior. But, you know, If you've got, you know, if you're getting constant reports of something going on at someone's house and you're the sheriff in the other county, maybe you want to pick up the phone and say, hey, what's the deal with this guy?
Right.
Well, he demoted him to the jail. So
exactly.
Not a problem anymore.
Exactly.
Because
he's been
hanging on prisoners.
He's not a problem. Yeah, we don't have to deal with it anymore.
Right.
Sweep it
it's
under the
interesting
rug.
To hear you, Jeffrey O'Brien, talk about filming cops, because I think when people think about that issue just in general and generally the type of people who would advocate for such a thing, I mean, it's one thing to have nutbags like me and Gary and Carl talking about it.
But particularly nutbag Gary.
But, I mean, to have a guy like you just don't fit the mold, and yet you speak to a very real world, very not – radical reason why that might be a good idea.
Right. And I think that, you know, when some of these earlier incidents happened, you know, it's fun that, you know, we talk about my marketing and personal branding. You know, this happened in the pre-lawyer extraordinaire era.
Do you even know who you are? Sorry.
I don't. But, you know, for the average person, I mean, the average person, you know, we were ignored. Nobody believed in any of this stuff for years. The only reason people are listening now is because I'm better connected and, you know, have the mouthpiece and the resources that I didn't have then. But it shouldn't have to come to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that, you know, I've got a lot of friends in law enforcement, and when they've never doubted the stories, and they've been the ones urging us to speak out, because, you know, they're worried. This is the kind of stuff that ends up boomeranging on us as good people. And we're like, yeah, we tried. This is what we get. And it shouldn't be until somebody in the higher up of the department is running for the office that you finally get a response on things. No, so, we got a response. We didn't get an apology.
I just want to, first I want to point out something that I've observed in life is that when you encounter a peace officer, who clearly is willing to use their position, in ways that are unbecoming of the profession, whatever that may be, either intimidation or when it dawns on you, the individual who's observing this activity or this individual, that they're willing to use that, it's actually a very terrifying position to be in, because you suddenly realize that there's really nothing in that moment that you can do about it. So that's something you pointed out that's how I felt. I mean, is that how you guys felt? Especially when you're confronted by it. I mean, you're a lawyer, so I know you know your rights and you know the law. But nonetheless, when someone who claims a monopoly on force in society, like an agent of the state, a police officer, is demonstrates to you that, hey, I'm willing to use this against your will, that's a very, that takes you back a little bit.
And I can do it with impunity. I will win in front of a jury.
Yeah, and like I said, this was nothing that my wife or I ever experienced until these incidents happened living in Wright County. So I grew up in Golden Valley. Golden Valley cops were awesome. We'd go, I remember, you'd go and, you know, you ask, every year it was the, you know, when you're kids, remember the crime prevention cards with the Viking football cards?
Yeah. Oh,
I remember one time it was like towards the end of the season or whatever, we hit up one of the officers at the local grocery store and they asked if he had, and he's like, you know what? I got to clear out my car. We want to get like a whole box of the cards. Like, just here, just take them. We're like, you're awesome. Yeah. But, you know, but that's not all of them. Like I said, there are bad ones. And unfortunately, we've got one that I think is a bad one that behaves badly even outside of his,
let me challenge you just a little bit, or maybe even be, I don't know if it's devil's advocate, but it's an argument or a thought that I'm sympathetic to. I tend to believe that in our neighborhoods, in our communities, we, just all of us tend to do this, and I've done it myself, so I'm guilty. We tend to involve law enforcement, when maybe we ought not, maybe not, maybe walking over to your neighbor. And I understand. I'm not talking specifically about your instance, but I'm just talking about the general notion of using the police as sort of the manners police or the good neighbors police. Mm-hmm. Right, right. Oh, this neighbor didn't really do anything to infringe upon me, but I just generally don't like the aesthetic, or I don't like they're a little noisy. Doesn't that, In a very real way, sort of corrode the relationship between communities, or at least the potential to do so? Shouldn't we at least at some time kind of just walk over and say, hey, I come in peace I'd like to just talk about it? At least, you know what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying. I think a little bit is chicken and egg. All the decades of failed parenting strategies self-esteem and everything else where nobody ever does anything wrong, it's unfortunately come to this where
– and intransigence needs to be dealt with at some level,
like,
too,
okay,
right?
So the way that my wife and I were raised, we didn't think of involving law enforcement in these little disputes. So as example, so the story I told you where we caught the neighbor behind the house peeking in the windows, we didn't bother to call because it's like, we're not going to waste their time with this. He's a piece of shit. He's a little pissant. We're not going to waste their time with it. A year later, well, why didn't you call? Because we're not, you know, you guys are, we want you actually, you know, dealing with real issues, not this. Right. But if he's going to be a little baby and call, then we have to, you know, and document everything. So I hear what you're saying. I just think that we've now sunk to the point where there's enough people running around that it's, I'm going to do whatever I want and I'm always right. And I, you know, blah, 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 and screw you. And so now it's become to, now you always have to have some outside party intervening. I mean, that's part of one of my profession.
Right.
Some of the stupid things that have come across my desk as potential matters that I turn away is the same breakdown. You know, it's this, there is no possibility that somebody might be wrong anymore. It's just, I'm always right because, you know, I got all those participation trophies from when I was a kid because my parents said I was special.
Right. Yeah. And to be clear, I mean, you pointed out actually a couple of instances that are legitimate violations of your property, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if someone's trespassing without your permission, I don't think that's a frivolous matter.
No.
So that's not what I'm trying to say either. I've observed in suburbia, because I grew up there, this is a very common phenomenon in suburbia where people use the police as the sort of etiquette or manners.
The way we dealt with it was we used $10,000 worth of landscaping along the property line to enforce the manners so that basically can ignore it. You know, you know, it was kind of fun. My fence that I put up, you know, if you do it right on the lot line, you got to ask somebody's permission. I'm like, yeah, not going to do that. So I'm also not going to give them a foot of my land. So I put edging up to the boundary line, put 2 feet of rock in, and then put the fence. So, cause we've got dogs and I don't want to ever hear your dog bit me when I put my hand through the fence. Right. It's like, you're already 2 feet over the lot line. So why are you trespassing on my property?
Right.
So, right. Yeah, but you shouldn't, someone shouldn't have to go to the extent of $10,000 worth of a fence and landscaping just to make your neighbor behave like a civilized human being.
So I had an experience, a neighbor experience recently of the same vein. And Brandon, to your point, I totally agree. As a first time homeowner, 5 years ago, we bought our first house that we still live in. I've always resented that exact thing of like, I don't need the police to solve interpersonal disputes, you know, within a broad spectrum. There's really a minimal amount of time that I need to involve the police
for most things.
Yeah. But as a homeowner and we don't have an association, but we do have a neighborhood, a small community that has a lot of pride. And as a keeping up with the Joneses kind of way, I want to present my house the best way possible. And when there are those neighbors that you're describing, not as, nearly as bad as you're describing, Jeffrey, but we have two of our neighbors are probably, you know, arguably the worst neighbors in the neighborhood of 100 plus houses.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done nothing to infringe upon my rights generally. One neighbor had a couple toilets on his driveway for 6 months. Wow, that's really sucked and made your house look like shit. But, you know, what am I, you know, I can complain about it and bitch to my neighbors about it, but I'm not going to do anything about it, right? However, just a couple nights ago, we had an experience with one of our neighbors where I think there is substance abuse involved. I am guessing. And I think there's mental disorders involved as well. I am guessing. I've heard stories, though. Like he ran headfirst into a brick wall a couple years ago in his car while drunk. And, I've met him trying to push his car out of his driveway a couple times because he gets stuck a couple times each winter.
Does he work for the Anoka County Sheriff's Office?
He works in the jail, actually. Yeah. So he, a weird dude, but he's a weird dude, but he doesn't bother me. You can be a weird dude in your own house, you know. Sure. That whatever,
right?
And for five years, I hope so. Right,
otherwise I'm screwed, yeah. Man.
But they haven't bothered us or infringed upon our rights. But a couple nights ago, he pulls into his driveway and just lays on the horn at 1 a.m. Like, and we have a third of an acre, so
that's
we're
an
not,
act of aggression.
We're 50, maybe 50 yards. Our bedroom's maybe 50 yards from his driveway,
mm-hmm.
and just lays on the horn. It's not a beep beep. It's a beep beep. And holds it down, and we're talking 5-10 minutes of pretty solid at 1 a.m. in a quiet suburban neighborhood, and our windows are open and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he lives at the goddamn house,
right?
And so he eventually gets this big fat ass motherfucker gets out of his car, waddles over, you know, bangs on the door, gets the garage door open, he pulls in his car, and everything's over. But at what point should I? And I want to lay to you, point should I say? He's been blowing his horn for 5, 10, 15 minutes and get the police involved I could go over there and be like, dude, shut the fuck up. You know,
Or how about, hey, I noticed that you were a little heavy on the horn last night when most people sleep.
But I don't want to be passive aggressive. I don't want to be passive aggressive either because I hate that.
Well, no, so, I'm extension. But why can't you just say, hey, I noticed this?
Yeah.
Is that, you know, could we make that? Thing that doesn't happen.
Are you all right? Was there some sort of emergency?
Yeah. Is there anything I can do to help you?
Yeah.
And it's one time in 5 years, right? So it's not a regular occurrence, but it's, but it definitely is a, dude, if you don't stop in like 2 minutes, I'm going to call the police, right? Because, you know,
you shouldn't have to in the middle of the dead of night.
Yeah.
Walk out and confront some unknown quantity either.
Right.
You know, I mean, that wouldn't be responsible either.
See, ultimately this goes back to the fault of this is the lefty land planners that put so many regulations in place that it's no longer affordable for builders to do 1 acre lots. If you had an acre between you and the next person, a lot of this is when you're being, when houses, this guy that I'm talking about, our one wall is literally 21 feet from his garage because that's the absolute minimum that they had to do before, you know, to when they're building because they probably put as many houses on the land as possible to get their money back. You know, so that's, I think, part of the issue is that people are just too close together.
Yeah.
And we
actually have the biggest lawn in the neighborhood. And I wouldn't say we're close. Yeah. Hell yeah. That I have to mow every week. That I love to mow. But totally, Jeffrey. Like, we chose to move there. We saw how close we were.
I don't love
to mow,
for the record. I just,
you don't like to mow?
I don't love to mow.
I will tell you the next property we get will be acreage because I can't afford to live in another economic downturn where I've got the ne'er-do-wells living around me. I, you know, except when you plan for, I'm going to have a lot of folks like me, other professionals, other business owners, you know, that's cool when you've mm-hmm. got the...
But you can't control that.
Though, no. Right? So the only way is to get acreage so that you don't have to live near anybody.
You know, Montana yeah. or
you
Idaho.
You bring people in acreage. As you want to, you know, socialize with them.
They have acreage in Idaho. You can live in a cabin. In
you
the
can actually get some pretty good.
I hear
you
some
get some pretty good deals across
by Ruby Ridge.
You can actually get some pretty. Waco. There's actually you look at what's going on the eastern side of the St. Croix. There's actually some pretty decent prices on
that would
acreage
be,
lots.
You know, I'm not going to live.
There. My you dream
follow, just follow the Tax Exodus Expressway, which is you know the new bridge into Somerset.
Love it. Love
that was a story I think it was in the Business Journal last
Thank
week.
You, Paul Ryan.
Residential permits are skyrocketing in western Wisconsin since the advent. Of the bridge.
Is that right?
Yeah.
The people are just, it's a, they never, the central planners over here didn't realize they were slitting their own throats.
Yeah.
They were literally made like their most productive people.
See, if only they could have got, if only they could have got light rail across that thing. You
the
know?
The only thing that I just heard, they just passed a law that if you move from Minnesota to Wisconsin, your BMI has to double. So I don't think that's worth early death is worth.
Happy death. Happy death.
What was it? Was it the list of like the 10 drunkest cities? There were like six or seven were Wisconsin.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Spooner number one.
Yep.
Well, I think I told you this guy's last time. I remember going to visit my in-laws in Green Bay and the going to the liquor store and the Festival Foods, which, yes, that's something you can do there. You don't have to walk up one door and walk in another in Wisconsin, and they seem to be doing just fine.
Sounds like
true
chaos.
Liberty.
Yeah, exactly.
And Capistan, Scotty style.
They had a whole bunch of cases of, you know, it was the Miller, Lineys, New Glarus, you know, everything, you know, Titletown, Hinterland, all the Wisconsin beer on one wall. And then on another wall, it was Guinness, Harp, Red Stripe, Summit, Shells, Grain Belt, Corona, and it said World Beer. So if you weren't Wisconsin beer, you weren't from America. Yeah. So.
That's right. You're goddamn right.
You want to be afraid of somebody? Be afraid of me!